episode 102. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of BulaNetwork.com. My name is Randy Cantrell. I'm coming to you live from Dallas, Texas in the Yellow Studio. And no, I'm not recording on Thursday again. Man, I've got to figure this out. You know, Thursdays were working there for a while, and boy, lately it has just not been working out for me at all. As I hit the record button, today is Saturday, September the 24th, 2011. Now, the great thing about Saturday, it's college football day, and we've got it going on the flat panel here in the studio. Alabama is, man, they are laying the wood to Arkansas. Oklahoma State seems to be trying to do everything they can to lose to Texas A&M, but they're ahead right now. If you're not a college football fan, what's your problem? What's wrong with you? Hey, for me around here, it's college football and it's hockey. Yesterday, here in Dallas, Mike Modano, the number one American-born NHL player of all time. Well, so far as points and scoring goes, he gave his retirement press conference yesterday. It was very emotional, as most pro athlete retirement shindigs seem to be. And you can understand why. I mean, these are guys who've, man, they've played this game for as long as they can remember. His mom and dad were there, and he was crying throughout the thing, and at some point, you know, his mom got up and came up, walked behind the table and hugged him. And then his dad came up. It was kind of cool. In fact, it was very cool, frankly. But those are always kind of, touching affairs. I rather like them myself. And it does sort of lead into the subject of today's show. And I don't know exactly how I'm going to title this, but what it really speaks to is it speaks to definition, the definition of our lives, what defines us. So, there you have it. That'll be the episode today. BulaNetwork.com, this is episode 102. Well, as we catch our breath rolling into the weekend, it was another hectic, crazy week around here. And in some ways, in a good way, and in other ways, well, okay. I mean, sometimes it can just be, you know, just too busy. Just way too busy. Had a phone growing out of my head, it seemed like, all day yesterday. Thursday wasn't much better, and so it's why I wasn't able to, I just couldn't carve out, this is terrible to say, but I couldn't carve out enough time. And, you know, it happens. So, September 24th, 2011, and I tell you, man, the last two mornings here have been just terrific, because you open the doors and it's 60 degrees in the morning, and it's, college football, the fall climate, and the beginning of the NHL. And it's just all good. It's all good. What defines you? Two stories come to mind of individuals that I know. They will remain nameless. So we've got candidate number one, and candidate number one, a fella about my age, you know, a middle-aged guy, Very successful. Very, very successful. Successful in corporate sales for major companies. Did extremely well financially. Lived in a big house. Had lots of cool toys. And the company merged. Well, they were acquired, actually, by another company. And he found himself, as they say, displaced. Out of work. Just like that. And because of his age, found it very difficult to find something else. Because as many guys his age, he was overqualified for so many things. And no, nobody's going to tell you that they discriminate based on age, but they do, and we all know that. And he suffered that. And as time marched on and continued to march on, and, well, we need to sell a house. And a lot of the toys, well, those had to go. And all of a sudden, the lifestyle changed rather dramatically. Now, instead of viewing this as, oh, the horror of it, how sad. Now, let me tell you about candidate number two. Candidate number two, good job, highly compensated, was a muckety-muck. And he, too, suffered from the sale of a company. And as a result, found himself displaced. Well, he had some other things that he kind of wanted to do, and so he didn't try to go out and replicate what he had. He rather chose a different path, and the path that he chose was a path of, it was a path of service and more simple living. And he, too, sold the house, got rid of the toys. Both guys today I would describe as content, if not happy. Oh, they don't have what they once had. They don't live in houses nearly as big or as fancy or as expensive as what they once had. Oh, they don't drive the same cars, that's for sure. Oh, they don't have as many suits in their closet as they once had. Oh, they both work. Their work now is... Well, financially speaking, I doubt either one of them are making even 25% of what they once made. And as I sometimes have these kinds of conversations with people, so many people, oh, that's awful. No, not really. Oh, well, you know, it's just a sad story of despair and a sad story of failure. No, not really. And, of course, I sometimes do anger people because I pose the question, are you to think that their $500,000 home or their $1 million home, that defined them? Are you telling me that their nice imported car that they drove or their fancy custom-made suits, that defined them? Or maybe it's the ability to take these exotic vacations to places that most of us just, well, we Google and we read about it on the internet or we see it in some travel magazine. Does that define them? No. People sometimes will lament, and there's a book, and I've got it, and it's a fairly decent book, by the way. It's about quiet desperation, you know, leading a life of quiet desperation. And I would argue that I don't know that desperation has to necessarily be lived quietly. I know people that are rather desperate, and they aren't quiet at all about it. And I know other people who... Well, people look at their lives and think, oh, you know, what a sad life of quiet desperation they must be living. And no, not really. And these two men, they come to mind because these two men are not living lives of quiet desperation. Oh, they're living lives that are vastly different than the life they once lived. And my counter to those who view them sadly is these are stories of resilience. These might even be stories of people who not only were resilient, but people, well, people who may have figured some things out. They may have figured out, you know what, the big house, it doesn't matter so much. The closet full of custom clothes, it doesn't matter so much. And the cars that are in that 3 or 4 car garage, well, you know, they're just machines. Cool machines for sure, but they're still just machines. And when it gets down to it, and no, I'm not going to be preachy, but if you've listened to me any length of time at all, then you know that, yes, God and spiritual things have a prominent place. And when it's all said and done, two things, and probably in this order, well, no doubt, probably. In my view, they are in this order. Two things really matter. And those two things are your relationship, your faithful relationship to God, and the relationship that you have with the people that you love and who love you. So if you want to have a conversation about what defines us, and if you want to ponder what defines us, I would encourage you to think about those two areas. Now, I realize that that's not the case with a lot of people. I realize that there are lots and lots and lots of people who, well, they don't think things define them, but the minute things go south, you just watch it. And it doesn't, by the way, have to be a possession. It could be, well, it could be a job. It could be a job title. It could be a career. You know, these things that just, well, they just kind of form our identity. I know whereof I speak because I too have suffered such things. You know, lives of quiet desperation don't necessarily have to be entire lives of quiet desperation, nor do they have to be lives of desperation at all. But desperation, I believe, it hits us all. You know, life is not just this tranquil sea that we are on. Life has its ups and life has its downs, and sometimes we go through these moments of despair, and sometimes they last an extraordinary long time, and sometimes we get on the mountaintop and boy, those just seem to be far too brief. But it is the human condition. It's how things go. And as always, it's our reaction to it that probably really does matter the most. Question: does your job, does your career, does the place where you report to work every day, does that define you? Does the car that you drive to get there every day, does that define you? When you pull up to the driveway coming back home after a hard day's work, does that address, does that street, does that subdivision, does that neighborhood, does that define you? What about the clothes that you're wearing all through the day? Maybe those define you. Or maybe there's some plaque on the wall or some diploma on the wall. Maybe that defines you. Or perhaps maybe there's some title and maybe it's a fancy title. And maybe that defines you. Now, the frailty of all that is those things can go, and they can go quick. And the two stories that I have told are not stories of collateral damage of the present economy. In fact, these two men went through these experiences long before the present distress. The present distress had nothing to do with their situation. Did they see these things coming? No. Did they plan for these things? No. But they adjusted and they adapted and they proved their resilience and they proved, you know what, the human spirit can come out the other side and sometimes can come out the other side better for the wear. Yes, it's possible. Now, so many people love to take all the heartache and the bad times that come and whine and complain and lament and question, why me, and woe is me. I've sat across from people who had to face the practical reality that they might have to sell the $750,000 home. And it just pained them so. I got to confess, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, so? I mean, okay, so you come back down to earth and you live, you know, you live a more practical life. You know, you join the rest of us. I mean, is that really as bad as it gets? Oh, we've got to give up this, you know, the fancy address. And of course, you're listening to the voice of a guy who, you know, we drive a Honda Accord. Well, okay, I've got a little nicer car than that, but brace yourself. Are you ready? Because it's really expensive. It's a Mazda Speed 3. Yeah, Google it. It's a Mazda Speed 3. It's a little four-door, four-banger that just hauls. And I love it. I love it. Yeah, okay, I admit. My screensaver right now, well, actually, it's not my screensaver. It's my wallpaper. My wallpaper on my computer right now. Yeah, it's an Aston Martin. Okay, you know, so it's, yeah, I'm, do I want one? No. Would I take one? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Am I ever going to buy one? No. Are you kidding me? I'm not going to, if I had $250,000 to spend on a car, I wouldn't. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. You know, I'm far more practical than that. But I honestly have sat down. I've honestly looked into anguished eyes of people who just were absolutely in despair and devastation because they were going to have to give up a house that had more bedrooms than they could even visit in a single day. In fact, they would admit that the vast majority of rooms in their house they hadn't been in, and they couldn't tell you the last time they had. And I'm thinking, you know, so you're willing to just be a slave to this house? It makes no sense to me, but, you know, who am I? In their head, they have defined themselves by that house. They have defined themselves by the things they have, by the status that they possess, by their diploma, by their title, any number of things. You know, we wrap our identities up in these things that, quite frankly, well, they're so fragile that they can be taken away. And even if they're not taken away, they don't last. Now, I've driven some cool cars. I've owned some cool cars, but I've never had a car that loved me back. I've never had a car that, you know, okay, yes, I can get behind the wheel of my Mazda Speed 3, and it's cool and it's fun, but, you know, when life knocks me down, drags me out, jerks me through a knothole backwards, my Mazda Speed 3, as cool as I think it is, it doesn't do a whole lot to give me wisdom. It doesn't do a whole lot to help me through a tough decision. It really isn't there for me, not in that way. I'd love to tell you that in the midst of all this riffing that I've got you know, I've got a hard, fast answer. I kind of sort of do. And the hard, fast answer is if you don't have faith, if you don't look to a higher power or you don't believe in God, I do feel for you. I positively do feel for you. And I don't know. It just kind of puts it all in perspective, you know? But we do live in a society and we do live in a day and age where we have set ourselves up as gods. And yet, I've just mentioned some circumstances that prove we're not. If we were, then we could control all of these things. And the fact is, we cannot control all of these things. The fact is, there are so many things beyond our control. And as a result, we must conclude, well, we're not as powerful as we thought we were. We're not as in command of every facet of our life as much as we would like to be, maybe even as much as we think we should be. Because you and I both know that good things happen to bad people and bad things happen to good people, and so it goes. There is something to good fortune and bad fortune. There is something to luck, good and bad, and there is something to time and chance. As the scripture says, time and chance, it does happen to us all. Oh, I'm thankful now. I'm thankful for the blessings that I have had. I trust that you are. I hope that you are. But know this, whatever blessings that you have today, if some of those were to be taken from you, if all of a sudden the job goes away, if all of a sudden the education, well, it's just, it doesn't open the doors that it once did. And if all of a sudden the car that you drive that you're so proud of, somebody comes up in a tow truck and takes it away, or you just have to part with it because you can no longer afford it, or if that were to happen to your house, it only defines you to the degree that you allow it to. Boy, there's the rub. It does. Those things do, they do so deeply affect us, don't they? Do you realize how many people work like crazy for stuff? I was watching, my wife and I were watching, we're fond of Dateline and some of those kind of shows, especially if they, we're fond of them if they are, you know, if they're about a murder mystery or something of that sort. Yeah, I don't know. Call us morbid. And last night, I don't remember, one of the news programs had a thing about a couple in Florida, and they lived in a $4.5 million home. And the story was that she was kidnapped and the ransom was $50,000. Well, you know, right off at the beginning of the show, I'm thinking $50,000. I mean, it's chump change. I mean, this makes no sense. Well, it turns out she had faked the entire thing. $50,000. Yeah, married, kids. And in the interview, she's talking to the policeman about their $4.5 million home and the $25,000 a month mortgage. And Rhonda looked at me and she said, did she just say $25,000 a month? And I said, yeah. But it's a $4.5 million house. I mean, you know, it's not going to be $1,000 a month. $25,000 a month. Okay, that's probably about right for a $4.5 million house. Not anymore. Divorced. Did get joint custody of the kids, but, you know, a world turned upside down, and for what? I mean, okay, what's the $4.5 million house going to do for you? What's the, you know, the Porsche SUV going to do for you? Nothing. Lost her mind, went absolutely crazy, I guess. I mean, just trying to extort 50 grand, I don't, you know. Man, we work so hard for stuff, don't we? We devote ourselves, we devote our lives so that we can pay that $25,000 a month and live in that $4.5 million home. Well, okay. No, we don't. Some people do. You and I don't. You and I don't. You know, maybe we bust our chops for to pay a $2,500 a month mortgage on, you know, on a $750,000 home or a $500,000 home. The dollar figure really is just relative. You do know that, don't you? Because I know people that will devote themselves to a $400,000 home every bit, if not more so, than a guy that might devote himself to a $4.5 million home. It's, you know, it's six one half dozen another, as they say. What a waste. What a waste. And yet when I think of these two fellows, and I think of there are others, I know others like them, who went from one standard of living to a significantly lower standard of living, who went from one lifestyle that was far more opulent than the lifestyle that they now enjoy. And I look at them and I look at their careers and I look at, well, as other people would term it, you know, you look at how far they've fallen, and I've just got to conclude, you know, they really didn't fall. I really don't think they fell. I really rather think that they elevated themselves. I really think that they freed themselves. I really think that they found out the things that really do matter. I've not had the conversation, but I have often wondered if they could go back, would they? And if they could go back and say, okay, this is how much money I'm making, but you know what? We're just going to devote ourselves to a simple life. We're just going to keep things simple, but boy, that's hard. You know, that's hard. I mean, we get to making a certain amount of money, and societal pressures and our own desires and our own lust and our own passions kind of fuel the fire. And before you know it, life gets away from us. I am fond of the minimalist crowd. I truly am. Now, I don't profess to be a minimalist in the sense that you come into the Yellow Studio, and I'm surrounded by books, I'm surrounded by music. I've got obviously a certain amount of equipment and gear. But I don't know that any of it is all that important. Does the Yellow Studio define me? Well, it identifies me. I don't know that it defines me. I went for years and years and didn't have it. I mean, after all, in the scope of my lifetime, 54 years, the Yellow Studio has been in existence for, I don't know, three. Maybe 3 to 4. You've not known about it until probably January of 2010, and that's if you were in on this early. If the Yellow Studio went away and if I went away in this format, you know, is it really going to matter? I would hope that I would be missed, but that really doesn't have so much to do with the studio, does it? No, that has to do with you, and that has to do with me, and that has to do with our connection. That has to do with you finding some value in the thing that I say and me finding tremendous value in your willingness to give me your time and attention and your willingness to hear me say it. And that really is the point. Because it's, after all, it's relationships that tend to matter the most. Ours with God and ours with each other. And once you get beyond that, well, I don't know, is there anything beyond that? I mean, does anything really much matter? Probably not. Ah, that was a sober episode, eh? It's been on my mind. It's been on my mind all week because I've had countless conversations with people who have been in some cases, you know, they think desperate situations. And I'm like, you know, this isn't that desperate. I mean, you've got your health, you've got your family, you've got a lot to be thankful for, and you've got a lot on the upside, and you're going through a tough spot right now. So, doesn't mean it's going to last forever. I mean, you know the age-old adage. I mean, what is it? It's something along the lines of failure isn't fatal. Failure isn't final. Well, it can be. It doesn't have to be. I think, again, it's pretty determined by our reaction, our response to it. And I'm rather pleased to know men and women whose responses were quite, well, in a word, valiant. They were valiant. It takes, I think, real strong character for somebody to step out of the big, expensive, fancy home and go to a humble abode. It takes somebody with pretty strong character, I think, to get rid of the exotic foreign cars and to not be ashamed of driving a Honda Civic. And instead of looking my nose down at such people and going, oh, isn't that sad? Isn't that pitiful? You know, he used to be somebody, and he used to drive around in this car. You know, I rather look at these people, and I'm just proud. I mean, I got to tell you, I'm proud of them. I'm proud that they do it. I'm proud that they can do it. I'm embarrassed, not for them, but I'm embarrassed for the poor soul that judges them wrongfully. I'm proud of their resilience. I'm proud of the human spirit. I'm proud that they realize it's all just stuff and it doesn't matter. You know, we'll live to fight another day. Now, what's interesting about the two stories that I've told, the two examples that I'm thinking of, neither one devoted themselves to climb back to what you and I would call prosperity. And that's interesting to me. They rather embrace the notion that, you know, this simpler life, it just kind of suits us. We kind of like this. This is kind of cool. And I thought, yes, yes, it is. It is kind of cool. My name is Randy Cantrell. This is BulaNetwork.com. City of origin is Dallas, Texas. I hope you'll opt into the email list. And this is the Yellow Studio.